The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
We've got 18 NFL teams holding their mandatory three-day mini camps this week. You can see them all right here. 10 teams already held theirs last week, while the Texans, Colts, 49ers, and Eagles have opted out. We will keep you updated on all this throughout the week, every day this week here on NFL Live. Welcome you here to the show. Coming later, the one Cowboys player who someone here thinks will have a huge year, and it's not Dak or Zeke. You see him right there. Adam Schefter, Lewis Riddick, Mina Kimes, and Marcus Spears with you for the hour. A report from Jags camp on Trevor Lawrence is coming soon. Too, but we begin with the Patriots. And a key piece of the New England defense, Stephon Gilmore, a no-show at camp. Gilmore heading into the final year of his contract, a salary of only $7 million. Of course, he's rehabbing from a partially torn quad. The cornerback quite warranted in asking for more money when you look at his numbers. And here are those numbers. Gilmore has been a vital part of this pass defense since arriving in New England in 2017. No defensive back has allowed fewer yards per target as the nearest defender than Stephon Gilmore over the last four seasons per NFL Next Gen stats. That's huge. And Gilmore also allowed a 51% completion rate as the nearest defender. That's the third best over that span, and that's how we should be talking about it when we talk about corners in the league. Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots for us, joins us now. Mike, what more can you add on the situation with Stephon Gilmore?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
So, Laura, he doesn't show up today for the first day of mandatory minicamp. Teammates note his absence. Veteran safety Adrian Phillips saying, "I support my brother. I wish he was here, but I support him all the same." So then the question becomes, why isn't Gilmore here? And Stephon, or no one close to him, has said this, but all signs point to his contract. Due to earn a base salary of $7 million this season, which is below market for a player of his caliber, the reason for the low figure is the Patriots actually advanced him $4.5 million of that salary last year. So that's sort of the situation with Gilmore from a financial standpoint and players supporting him, hoping he'll be back soon.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on this one for sure. And Mike, hang tight. We'll be back with you on an update on the quarterbacks at Patriots camp in just a moment. But let's bring it out to the crew here. Adam, what else should we know on Gilmore and the way Bill Belichick will handle this?
Well, Laura, Stephon Gilmore was not there today. He will not be there tomorrow, and he will not be there the next day. He will not attend this week's mini camp. And the truth of the matter is, he's still recovering from that partially torn quad injury that he had last year. So even if he were healthy, I don't know that he could be out there. The contract remains an issue and is going to be an issue. And I think the Patriots have something of an issue of their own on their hands. They did not draft any cornerbacks in this draft. J.C. Jackson is the only experienced outside cornerback. They almost have to have Stephon Gilmore to run the defense the way that Bill Belichick likes to run the defense. Now, the Patriots have shown in the past that they're willing to move on to from players before the time is right, and they'd rather bail on a player early than be stuck with him later. But in this particular case, his value to the defense is vast. He's not going to be there, not happy with the contract, wants it redone. Last year, the Patriots reworked the contract, and you'd have to figure that the two sides can figure out a way to come to an agreement again, especially when Tom Brady's coming to town in week four, and they don't want Tom Brady throwing for 500 yards against a Stephon Gilmore-less defense.
Yeah, this is an interesting situation here for a guy who's 30 years old, who is coming off of injury, and he's having to negotiate with a football team and with a coach who, for all intents and purposes, is the general manager, that is more economically driven in their decision-making than any team really in the history of the salary cap era. Bill is exactly as Adam said. Bill's one of those guys who likes to get out ahead of moves that he feels potentially could go bad in terms of contracts, meaning not committing a lot of guaranteed money to players that he feels as though are on the backside of his career. Now, with Stephon, I think you could argue that he probably has 3 or 4 good years left, barring any further injury. This is a guy who, again, as Adam alluded to, plays exactly his strengths suit the style of defense that Bill likes to play, mainly a lot of up-in-your-face, press man-to-man coverage. Stephon is a master at it, an absolute master, but you could see his side of it, too. He's in the fifth year of this contract that paid him on average $13 million per year when he signed it in 2017. $13 million per year right now puts him about not even in the top 10 in terms of average salary with corners. I mean, the top guy is making $20 million in Jalen Ramsey, so I don't know where this is headed, but I can see his point.
Yeah, more on Jalen Ramsey, by the way, how he factors in just a moment. But, Mina, I'm living in the world where I think somehow they get this figured out, but let's live in a world for now where they don't. What does this Patriots defense look like without Stephon Gilmore?
Well, Laura, they have some depth. I mean, you saw some of the names there. Jonathan Jones plays inside. J.C. Jackson, two of the more underrated DBs in the entire NFL. They did sign Jalen Mills this offseason. But Adam made a really good point about needing Stephon's experience on the outside. And I would argue the Patriots should do everything in their power to get this done, because the case for them being a contender, a playoff team in 2021, is predicated to me on the defense bouncing back in a big way. A defense that ranked first in efficiency in 2019 and dropped to 26th last year, in large part because of departures and free agency and COVID opt-outs. Now you get Hightower and Van Noy back. They've added a bunch of reinforcements in the front seven. And of course, the secondary has been the strength in the past. If Gilmore's there, this could be a top 10, even top 5 defense again. And that, to me, is the stability on this team, because we don't know who's playing quarterback.
I'm in agreement with you, Mina, especially when you start thinking about what Bill Belichick, Steve Belichick, his son, likes to do defensively. And remember, they brought Matt Patricia back as well. This defense has been predicated on having a lockdown guy so you can create for the other 10. I was a beneficiary of playing with a great player in DeMarcus Ware, who created opportunities. We talk about what Aaron Donald does for guys. We know what Jalen Ramsey – look, John Johnson, Troy Hill, really good players. But having Jalen Ramsey definitely helped them be better players when they were all in Los Angeles together. That is who Stephon is. When coaches have the ability to say, hey, you take the number one guy and we'll deal with everybody else, that's a plus on any defense. You can get creative with pressures. You can create situations for your defense to be advantageous. And then when you think about how those guys operate and how they free up things on the back end, it's just a calming presence for every other guy that's looking over to that side. It's a guy that can come into the huddle that you can immediately identify with and say, hey, man, we need a play. I've had a million of those conversations. I know Lou Riddick has had a million of those conversations throughout the course of a game. When you're looking at those type of players and saying, hey, we need a play, man, go do your thing. So when you lose that, you lose more than just a good player. You lose opportunities defensively, and you lose some of your playbook because you got a guy that can man up and lock down on one side of the field.
You know, Adam, maybe we're speaking to Bill Belichick here, just praising Stephon Gilmore and how important he is to his defense, but I think Belichick knows that. Let's say somehow they don't get this figured out. What do you think the market would look like for a player of the caliber of Stephon Gilmore if he ends up being somebody that's out there?
Well, it's interesting, Laura, because really for the last couple of years, very quietly, it's like there's been trade smoke blowing around Stephon Gilmore's name. Every offseason for the last couple, there's been some speculation that maybe Stephon Gilmore will be used as a chip for the Patriots to come up and draft a quarterback. And guess what? They didn't have to use anything to come up. They got Mac Jones right where they were this year. And I think it's at the point now where we're in mid-June where the two sides really need each other. The Patriots need Stephon Gilmore to play defense at the level that they want to play at in an offseason where they already spent a lot of money at a lot of positions. And frankly, there's not another team right now that's going to pay Stephon Gilmore the way the Patriots can with the position that they're in. So these two sides need to come together, and I think they will at some point here before training camp.
Yeah, It's important to think about it that way. All right, we did mention Jalen Ramsey. Speaking of him, he's not giving up. He said he's going to try and recruit Stephon Gilmore. Look at this tweet from earlier. Yo, Stephon Gilmore, what's good, my dog? Not sure if he'll have the same luck as A.J. Brown and the Titans did with recruiting Julio, but I don't know. You never say never, although I kind of believe Shefty on this one. All right, let's get Mike Reese back in here. Mike, what is the latest on the quarterbacks in New England, starting with Cam Newton and his hand injury?
So Cam was back at practice today, Laura, a rainy practice. And I've been to four practices this spring for the Patriots. And every time Cam has been out there, he's been the first quarterback to go through the repetitions. Today, it went Cam, then it went Mac Jones, then Jarrett Stidham, and then Brian Hoyer. And one point I would make, I tried to put on my best Lewis Riddick hat. And I said, yeah, it's raining out here. What should I be looking for with these quarterbacks? And Mac Jones, the way he controlled the wet football and his accuracy was still on point. I said, you know what, if Lewis was watching this practice, I think he might be pretty impressed here with Mac Jones. Looked to me like he controlled the ball the best of the quarterbacks in the bad conditions.
Yeah, Mike, I'm watching Lewis while you give that report, and he smiled when you said that, so I think he was impressed by your report. Thanks so much, Mike Reese. Hey, you think Browns fans are ready for football? Jarvis Landry held a charity softball tournament. Browns fans were tailgating 5 hours before this thing. Makes me smile. Travis Kelce was part of the charity softball game, still had the postseason fresh on his mind, and the Chiefs tight end had high praise for Cleveland. Listen to this.
I would say they're definitely a contender, without a doubt. I mean, it's definitely there. Baker and the gang have upped the ante, made this team an unbelievable team and a team you have to prepare for and take serious. And, you know, I think that moving forward, without a doubt, I can see a lot more playoff games between us. And, you know, I'll just take it one day at a time and hope for it. But I think that, you know, the Browns and Chiefs are definitely neck and neck for sure.
Okay, Marcus, do you agree with Travis Kelce? Are the Browns and Chiefs neck and neck?
Hell no. Oh. Travis Kelce trying to get out of Cleveland alive.
Yep.
That's all that was. He was at the celebrity softball game. He had to make it out of the city. But listen, that is not to throw any disregard toward Cleveland. They got a great roster, and this team played well. Like, it's expectation now. You know, Lou talked about this earlier when we were on together. It's no longer that figment of imagination that L. Boogie, you can remember 2 years ago when we were having this Cleveland Browns conversation, and I was like, miss me with that. I'm not believing it until I see it. So I saw it last year, but neck and neck with the Kansas City Chiefs, no. I like what the Browns are. I actually love what they've done with their roster construction and what Andrew Berry did, what Kevin Stefanski did in putting Baker Mayfield in a great situation. The run game, the offensive line, you look at this team, it's built the right way. They made great moves in the offseason, but the bottom line is the Kansas City Chiefs are still the kings of the AFC. They still have 15 at quarterback. They've revamped an offensive line, and this team has been to the Super Bowl back-to-back years. No one in the AFC is neck and neck with them right now until they beat them, and that's really what it boils down to. But roster construction is the best way to start, and the Cleveland Browns lead in the clubhouse in that direction.
Well, yeah, you mentioned that roster, and on paper, right, it should be better with OBJ coming back and being healthy. And you know, the reality is, Mina, we saw the Browns hang around with the Chiefs in the playoffs without OBJ, also without Patrick Mahomes for some of that game on the other side, yeah. So that's important. But can you explain why the marriage between OBJ and Baker Mayfield just hasn't really worked out yet?
Laura, this is one of the like great unsolved mysteries of the NFL right now. Episode one is what happens to Julio Jones in the red zone. That still has never been solved. And episode two is why is Baker Mayfield statistically a better quarterback without OBJ? I've watched every snap these two guys have played together, and I don't have a simple answer for you. Sometimes I think it's because OBJ was coming off of injury, he was banged up. Other times Baker was simply inaccurate, getting him the football. You're seeing here the highlights from the Cowboys game where they got him the ball and off of those end arounds, and you saw that speed that he displayed so early in his career in New York, where he could turn a 5-yard slant to a touchdown every time. I don't know why that guy hasn't been in Cleveland. I don't have an answer other than small sample size, maybe, but I'll tell you this, if he is that guy, if this Browns offense, which was quite efficient last year, adds the old OBJ, then they become the number one team, the number one contender to unseat Kansas City. I saw Kansas City as number one, but right now I've got the Bills number two. The Browns could easily slide up into that spot for me.
Yeah, they've got a lot of good things going on, and there's no doubt there's pressure on OBJ just to fit into this offense, because late in the year last year, they really were they were at their best when they were just kind of operating organically, right? So Baker wasn't back looking for 13. He was just dropping back and just reading through the progressions and throwing the football to the open receiver. Sounds simple, but yet not everybody does that. People feel pressure to get the ball to certain big-time playmakers. Maybe that's a little bit of a part of it. Hopefully OBJ can just kind of weave himself into the fabric of the offense overall naturally this year. What I'm watching, though, I'll tell you this. This defense in particular, I think every defense in the AFC in particular needs to make sure that they have everything squared away on that side of the ball, side of the ball, in terms of rush and coverage, because that is going to be how you ultimately are going to have to beat Patrick Mahomes. You're going to have to close the game on him. Either that's by putting him on his back or turning the football over. So they've got a lot of young, nice players that they added, particularly in the secondary. Greg Newsom, one on your screen right now. They're going to have to come through for this football team. And if they do, Travis may be forecasting something that maybe he shouldn't be wishing for, and that's for them to be neck and neck.
Yeah, right. He thought he was just trying to get out of the charity softball tournament, you know, making everybody feel good. And then later on, he's going to be like, man, why did I say that? And by now, you know all about the Aaron Rodgers and Packers drama. It all started last year on April 23rd when the Packers traded up for Jordan Love on the opening night of the 2020 NFL draft. Then Rodgers raised some eyebrows after Green Bay's second straight loss in the NFC Championship, saying that his future was, quote, a beautiful mystery. That led to April 29th this year when Adam Schefter reported that Rodgers no longer wants to return to Green Bay. Rodgers has passed on the team's offseason workouts and missed mandatory minicamp last week, making him subject to be fined a shade over $93,000. And then Packers president Mark Murphy made these comments during an event at Lambeau Field on Thursday that probably aren't going to help the situation. He said, I'm often reminded, though, of Ted Thompson, as most of you know, just a great general manager, passed away this past year, or excuse me, earlier this year, often talked about Aaron, that he was it wasn't just Aaron, a lot of different players. He would say he's a complicated fella. So I'll just say that. He was sort of winding around there, kind of like me trying to read whatever Mark Murphy was trying to say. But either way, he called him a complicated fellow, which has Marcus Spears with his head in his hands. What do you make, Marcus, of Murphy's quotes there?
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
I mean, the only word I can come up with is stupid. I've been trying to figure out a better word, a more educated word, to be a little more eloquent on television because people expect us to be it. But it's stupid for Mark Murphy to say this at this point, especially if you're trying to get the guy back. Like, I think it's, y'all know, I think it's a far gone conclusion. I think Aaron Rodgers is out of there. He made his mind up a long time ago. But for Mark Murphy to say that publicly and then, like, present that to Green Bay people, and then to get out to the public, it's not read the room, it's read the damn world. Everybody in the football world is paying attention to this story. So he threw a jab. Now, hopefully it's calculated, and hopefully it's something to give another reason to why Aaron Rodgers won't be a Green Bay Packer by him making that statement. But to say that in the midst of all of this that we've been talking about and all of the things that Shefty has reported on this situation is just stupid. That's the only word I can come up with, y'all. Shefty, help me out, because I don't want them to be mad at me in Green Bay in the front office.
Well, they're going to be mad at you, but the fact of the matter is I think Mark Murphy is a part of this situation just as much as Brian Gutekunst has been a part of the situation. I think a lot of people have talked more about the general manager than the president, and the president is as much responsible as the general manager or anybody else. And in this particular case, everything that Matt LaFleur and Brian Gutekunst have said this offseason since this surfaced has been right on point. They've said all the things that you want to say about the importance of Aaron Rodgers and how much he means to the franchise and how much they want him back. And Aaron Rodgers may be a complicated fella. He may be the most complicated fella in the NFL. But we don't need the Packers president saying that he's anything than an integral part of this organization and we want him back in the worst way. There is very little that anybody in the Packers should be saying other than how important that man, Aaron Rodgers, right there, is to this organization and its success. Because if he's not back, they're going to be in trouble. And so that, to me, I just didn't quite understand why he went there.
And, man, y'all, you know, Shefty, I deal in the reality. I don't really get emotional about these things, but golly, man, you got to be way smarter than this. Like, this is a part of business. This is just simply a part of business, even if you're moving on from Aaron Rodgers, to let everybody else know that you're talking about guys personally behind their backs. This is in regards to everybody in Green Bay. So what are they saying about me? I know players think that way. That's a damn shame that that man said that and made it public, man.
I don't know that it was calculated because it seems ridiculous for it to be calculated, but that's almost the only way to explain it away. And to you guys' point, I don't think he can.
What?
All right, to Jacksonville next, where Trevor Lawrence and the Jags are at minicamp. They're being extra cautious with the number one overall pick after some hamstring tightness has bothered him recently. Either way, Lawrence eager to grasp the Jaguars offense as quickly as possible. Here he is today.
I want to just master the offense. I want to have, you know, complete control and know everything and be comfortable. I mean, you can't really play free and play really well if you don't know what you're doing. So that's the goal, is just to master the offense by the time training camp comes around. So in training camp, we really can focus everything forward on being the best team we can come August 14th and then going on into the regular season as well.
Jaguars reporter Mike DiRocco at practice today. So Lawrence says he's working towards mastering the offense, but he needs to be on the field, right, to make that happen. So, Mike, how much did his hamstring injury hold him back today?
Lawrence didn't participate in any 11-on-11 work on Monday, but he did do a couple of 7-on-7 sessions, and he also participated in individual drills. When Lawrence did throw the ball, he looked fine. It didn't look like that injured left hamstring impacted him in any way. The balls came out on time, and he didn't really have any issues when he was rolling out either. As Urban Meyer said, look, they don't want any chance that he injures that hamstring further and then loses all this summer conditioning time. They want him 100% when he comes back for camp at the end of July.
Yeah, Mike Urban also said today that if there were a game today, Trevor Lawrence would be playing in it. So, Mina, define a successful season for Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer.
Well, I think for Jags fans, the most important thing is Lawrence's development. A successful season, in my mind, would be similar to what we saw out of Justin Herbert in Los Angeles. It's not about having a winning record necessarily, although I think the Jags would like to get closer to 500, which no longer is possible in today's NFL. But you want to see Lawrence develop over the course of the year and flash that sort of star power that Herbert did, that explosive play potential. The second most important thing is you want to see Urban Meyer, who I feel comfortable also calling a complicated fella, the Jags head coach and their head coach for the foreseeable future. You want to see that he can manage a professional football team. It's not about play calling with him. It's about, managing timeouts, simple as that, game management, situational decision making, those sorts of things that sometimes rookie head coaches come in from college and struggle with. If he can do that, and Trevor Lawrence develops, I think you can call it a successful season.
Yeah, so Jags fans out there, you might want to pump the brakes just a little bit, but maybe the future's really exciting. All right, let's get to the drama surrounding Le'Veon Bell and Andy Reid that has people talking. Bell posted on Instagram, "I'd never play for Andy Reid again. I'd retire first." And then came out with a series of tweets saying he didn't regret what he said, but he did regret airing it out publicly. Bell's contract with the Chiefs expired into the last season, and he's still unsigned. So Tyrann Mathieu came to the defense of his head coach, tweeting this yesterday: "These fellas will blame everybody for their lack of success. That's how I know I'm built different." Took a chance to give himself a little pat on the back. Why not? Lewis, were you surprised by Bell's comments? That's actually Adam. So we'll start with you, Adam. What do you think about Le'Veon Bell and the situation as the market looks like for him right now?
Listen, Le'Veon Bell is trying to get a job. I think he wants to continue playing running back in the NFL. And I think Andy Reid has one of the largest coaching trees in the NFL. And I think Andy Reid has one of the top reputations in the league. So all those teams that have Andy Reid disciples on it that could eventually need a running back, I think they'll be looking at it and saying, well, do we side with Le'Veon Bell or do we side with Andy Reid? And I think I know how the answer to that question is going to go. So I think Le'Veon Bell hurt his chances with some other prospective future employers by saying something about a figure that is widely popular across the NFL. Now, maybe he feels that way for whatever reason. Obviously, you can't deny the man his feelings, but I don't believe that that's a widely shared sentiment across the league. And when you're looking for a job, you probably wind up damaging your chances of landing a job with some of those same men that learn at the feet of Andy Reid.
You know, I'm tempted to make Lewis now be Adam, and they could trade spaces for the rest of the show. We won't do that to you guys. So, Lewis, what did you think about Le'Veon Bell's comments?
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that he aired out how disappointed he was in how last year went in the way that he did, because the truth of the matter is, if you turn on the tape and you watch him play, Kansas City was doing him a favor by giving him any touches, quite honestly, and they were trying to make it work. But they saw the writing on the wall just like everyone else has seen the writing on the wall. He's not the player that he once was. And a lot of times, players are the last ones to recognize that and or admit that. And we all get that. We understand that. We don't want to sometimes face what the tape is telling you right there in front of you, is that you're not what you once were. And Kansas City could see it. That's why Kansas City, that's why his reps decreased slowly but surely. And they could have basically, you know, they could have justified releasing him last year if they wanted to. So then to go and say, look, I would retire before I played with him again, well, was he really the problem, or was it the fact that you just didn't like how he assessed your skills? And I think the market's going to bear itself out. The market's going to show Le'Veon where he's at this point in his career, and he's probably not going to like it.
Yeah, it's interesting, Lewis, to your point. They did continue to give him reps when probably a lot of other teams might not have done that. Adam, let's get people updated on the latest around the NFL, beginning with the New England Patriots and Stephon Gilmore.
Well, Laura, he was not at the mandatory minicamp today. He will not show up for the remainder of the week. Obviously, there's a contract issue, but I also think that there's a health issue with him not being fully healthy from the partially torn quad injury that he suffered last year. So, again, there's no reason for him to be there. And with the contract situation being what it is, then there's absolutely no reason for him to be there in camp waiting for that new deal. Meanwhile, this weekend, the Dolphins reached agreement with their young, productive linebacker, Jerome Baker, a three-year extension worth $39 million, including $28.4 million in guaranteed money. Miami locking up one of its young defensive core players, somebody it's identified as a player it wants to keep moving forward, and that's exactly what the Dolphins have done moving forward. That's what good teams do. They identify good young talent, and they sign that good young talent before they become free agents.
Adam, I heard you there. That's a nice statement. We'll leave it right there. The Broncos, one of the 18 NFL teams holding their mandatory three-day mini camps this week, while we saw 10 last week. Of course, the Texans, Colts, 49ers, and Eagles all opted out. The big week around the league. And the Broncos have Drew Lock as their quarterback for now, plus Teddy Bridgewater, who you just saw. But because of their win now roster at pretty much every other position, Denver has been a rumored destination for the likes of Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson. Now, Lock and Bridgewater both did not have impressive QBRs last season, but accuracy separated the two guys. Bridgewater finished fifth in completion rate, while Locke completed an NFL worst 57% of his passes, and his 15 picks were tied with Carson Wentz for most in the league. Locke was the most aggressive quarterback in the league last year, averaging an NFL high 9 air yards per attempt, while Bridgewater finished 27th in that category. The accuracy really important there. Now, when it comes down to the quarterback situation in Denver, Von Miller told the Las Vegas Review-Journal, you start thinking, oh, we're going to get Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson, but hold on, wait a minute. We've got Drew Locke, and that's who we're running with. That's who we're going into the season with until anything changes. Von Miller did not say that in the exact tone that I did, but I felt it was necessary while reading that quote. Marcus, what stood out to you from Von Miller's comments?
What stood out to me is for now and anything changes is a damn death sentence, okay? Imagine this, y'all. I'm married to my wife unless anything changes. I'm married to my wife for now. I got a job for now. I'm working for ESPN until anything changes. That means something is probably going to change, okay? And when Von Miller is speaking, he's speaking the truth. Obviously, if you could get the two guys that he mentioned in Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun, that's a significant upgrade over whatever they have on the roster. And we know this business is about getting better, especially at that position. And it's not, it doesn't fall on Von Miller's deaf ears that they've been in this situation before with Peyton Manning, and he's had to do his thing along with DeMarcus Ware to get them to where they wanted to be. But he knows Drew Locke is not the answer. That's why you say unless anything changes or until anything changes. I'm just recommending to all men, don't tell your wife that. Don't tell your mama that. Don't tell your best friends that. Don't tell your colleagues that. Because when they hear that last part, they know they on the way damn out.
Morgan, hold on. Breaking news. Marcus Spears and his wife are still happily married and plan to stay together.
Yes.
And it's not until anything changes.
Yes.
That text just came in.
Yes.
Put it on the bottom line.
Yes.
Marcus and his wife are staying together. Hallelujah. Happy anniversary. Happily ever after. Good job,
Marcus.
Nothing's changing there. But something could change with the Broncos quarterback situation. So stay tuned to that. Because right now it is Drew Lock until anything changes. But something could change. Because let's keep in mind that the Broncos made an inquiry into Matthew Stafford. The Broncos made an inquiry into Carson Wentz. The Broncos made an inquiry on draft night into Aaron Rodgers. The Broncos made an inquiry into Deshaun Watson. The Broncos consider drafting a quarterback. You can't be sniffing around all these quarterbacks and think that Drew Locke's job is safe. Drew Locke will have the opportunity to go to camp and win that job. But steady Teddy Bridgewater is right there to try to win the job. And the Broncos general manager, George Patton, worked in Minnesota with steady Teddy Bridgewater. And so steady Teddy is going to have a chance to win that job while Marcus and his wife stay together.
They are the steady Teddy is like the spirit animal of Marcus and his wife's marriage. It's very steady and they will be together forever. Okay, so now that we know about all that, Mina, who do you think it should be? If we're talking about Drew Locke versus Teddy Bridgewater purely, I don't get anybody else in there, who should win that job?
Yeah, right. That's an important caveat because obviously the dream scenario is Aaron Rodgers. I would say the other dream scenario for Broncos fans is that Drew Locke has that sort of year three Josh Allen type leap, but it's very unlikely. The most realistic scenario, the one that's predicated on what we've seen so far, is that Teddy Bridgewater is the starter because he is the best quarterback on this roster. You can see there, at any stat you look at, in this case it's completion percentage, which of course favors Teddy because he doesn't air the ball out that much, but regardless of what you're considering, Teddy Bridgewater has been better than Drew Locke. He is a point guard. He is going to distribute the ball, get it in the hands of those Denver playmakers, who are quite good, by the way. They're skilled players. And this is very important, he doesn't turn it over, which is important in particular for this roster because I believe Denver has potentially a top three defense. And I know the phrase complimentary football isn't the sexiest. Well, I guess unless you're a defensive coach, then it's very sexy. But complimentary football can win games, especially when you got a defense like the one I believe Denver has.
Do you hear like how everyone's struggling to make a case for either one of these quarterbacks? That is a sure sign that, yeah, they're looking. Or when someone uses this phrase, right? We know exactly what we have in player so-and-so. We know exactly what we have. What that code word for is, man, I can't wait to get them up out of here and get somebody else. That's what that means. And that's, you know, that's not to be disrespectful, but that's the truth. If someone tells you, yeah, I know exactly what I got in you, that means, yeah, okay, let's see if we can turn the page on this one and move it along. Look, Teddy's been, as Adam has alluded to, steady Teddy for a long time. He was that way in Minnesota. He was that way in New Orleans. Yeah. He was that way in Carolina. But teams generally feel as though they need someone who can make a difference at some point in time in a game where it's not just about being steady. It's about being different. It's about being special. Neither of these quarterbacks make you feel that way. That's why they're on the lookout.
You know, come to NFL Live for the football. Stay for the relationship advice. Stay for the love in the air. That's what we do here for you on NFL Live. Some questions around Zeke's play, as his $19.8 million cash value last season was the second highest among running backs after Christian McCaffrey. Fumble issues plagued him as Zeke's 5 lost fumbles led all running backs in 2020. Zeke averaged 4.4 yards per touch last year, only reached 15 miles per hour on 14% of his touches per NFL Next Gen stats. Among the 57 running backs with 100 touches, both those rank outside the top 40. All right, so time to turn it around. And Zeke's quarterback, Dak Prescott, said his running back looks pretty good this spring.
Zeke looks great. I mean, Zeke's in the best shape of his life, looking fast. Obviously, everybody's seen the clips of him working out independently with his running back coach and his cuts, just how explosive he is. Excited just to have a full year with him again and getting him healthy throughout the whole season. Once again, with Zeke's healthy and Zeke's doing his thing, he's the best running back in the league.
So Zeke's in the best shape of his life. All is great in Cowboy land, right, Marcus?
Prayers up, man. Listen, I need it. I need it so bad. Listen, the bottom line is I don't care that Zeke is in the best shape of his life. I just want Zeke to return to form. I want Zeke to be the Zeke we talked about. Feed me. Wear his half-belly shirt, right? Show his six-pack. I got a one-pack, so I can't wear that shirt. That's the Zeke I need. But also, we can't talk about this without realizing how bad everything was surrounding him. The issue that I had with Zeke Elliott last year were the fumbles, because either it's going to be an issue, either you were disinterested or you weren't paying attention enough to that phase of your game and realizing the most important element is holding on to the football as a running back. He almost had 1,000 yards in his worst season in the NFL. So I still believe Zeke has a lot left in the tank, but I also believe he has the benefit from the guys around him, which we've had this conversation ad nauseum about all of the things that transpired in Dallas last year. I fully think that Zeke is going to be a major, major important part of what Dallas does offensively if they're going to be this high-powered as we thinking they are. He's going to have a prominent role in this offense. He's going to have to be involved not only in the run game but in the passing game, and I think he'll show up and play well this year.
But Zeke's efficiency will be directly related to the performance of this offensive line. When he first came into the league, when he first came out of Ohio State and he was in Dallas, like everyone was giving Dallas credit for building this team front to back, right? They were saying, they built it inside out. They built it the right way. Jerry has finally learned his lesson, and Zeke benefited from that. Now, obviously, he's a very, very talented individual, but he's a guy who needs the offensive line to give him some creases and to make sure that they're operating at a high level so he can. If they're not, he won't. It's as simple as that. Just the same as with the quarterback. If he's under duress all the time and Dak cannot sit back there, then he's not going to be able to perform. That's where everything for this team starts, that offensive line. If it's good again, they both will be good again. But I'll tell you what, overall as a team, if Dan Quinn don't fix that defense, they're going nowhere. I don't care what Cowboy Nation has to say about that. That's a fact. They don't fix the defense, they're going nowhere.
And Luke, can we be assured that this Cowboys offensive line, which once was the strength of the team, is going to be anywhere near what it once was? Like, this is a line that has gone from its strength to its question mark. And we don't know what we're going to get from the offensive line. We know that Dak is going to have a big year. He's going to come back healthy. Zeke looks like he's primed to have a big year. And if Zeke is primed to have a big year, Well, that'll be great because that'll keep the defense off the field. And even when it's on the field, it should be better with Dan Quinn. But again, I think you've touched on the point. The offensive line remains a major question mark here in Dallas, whereas in the past, it never was before.
Mina, what do you think?
You know, I agree with Adam that the offensive line is the most fragile part of this offense. It's still very talented. It's just thin. There's just not a lot of depth. And, of course, a lot of these starters, Tyron Smith, you know, have had injuries, Zach Martin. And if one of them goes down, I think that could be a huge issue for the offense. But I think for the Cowboys, they, even with all the improvements they made on defense, they need to be a top five offense to compensate for the defense and compete with Washington. And I believe they can be based on what we saw last year before Dak got hurt. And to me, this is where I disagree with Marcus. Like, I don't really think it's about running the ball. I mean, it'll help if Zeke doesn't put the ball on the ground and he's more efficient. He was outplayed a lot by, at times by Tony Pollard last season. But whereas he used to be more of, I think, the core feature of this offense, now it is Dak and those three wide receivers. Like, you know what they're going to do? They're going to come out in 11 personnel with all three of those stars on the field, and Dak's going to let it rip. This is an offense that was passing on early downs a lot more last season, in some cases because they had to, because of the situation the defense put them in. But to me, that's the formula for a successful Cowboys season.
Yeah, watch out for CeeDee Lamb. Hey, got time for one more thing before we go. Marcus, look away. Texas native Kyler Murray, who was born in 1997, was asked if he was a Cowboys fan growing up. His response, they were always bleep. So, Marcus, Kyler's formative years as a young man, ages 8 through 15, you were a centerpiece of that Cowboys roster. What do you want to say to young Kyler?
Is he frozen?
All right, you know what? I'm going to take it from here. Because Marcus today.
I'm not frozen, damn it. I'm not frozen. I'm not going to allow Kyler Murray to lie on TV. Oh. He was a Dallas Cowboy fan. Oh. He got a picture of him sitting in the stands. And we weren't abysmal every year. And he wants to call the Cowboys ass during his period. He just better make sure the Arizona Cardinals ain't ass
moving
forward.
Do you want this helmet?
Okay?
Because you don't have one right now.
I don't know if I'm going to have a job tomorrow, but we wasn't that.